Okay, let's start the feedback session. And we will start with group four, which is Tuck.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. We had a very, very good discussion. It was a very exciting one. Each of the sides has a fighting pose from the beginning. So it became like really, you know, fighting discussion. But it was very, very fruitful. First of all, the preparer said, so you need to consider the impact of the business. If you made a disclosure, it would impact to your business itself. That made the preparers to make it difficult for the preparer to make a clear disclosure. And the preparer are happy to disclose to our investors, however, not to the competitors. The problem of the general purpose financial statement, it will disclose to everybody, including the competitor who is a private company. And the private company are not required to disclose, whereas the public company was required to disclose everything. So that makes the sensitivity issues. Having said that, as everybody knows, in the public companies, there are capital providers. Capital providers need to know what's happening. Then the question is, what investor really want to know? The investor's idea is clear. They want to know whether the company has a good strategy of acquisition or bad strategy of acquisition. They would like to differentiate bad acquisition from the good acquisition. So that is what the investor want to know. So then the detailed disclosure requirement like IS 36 doesn't really work. The investor want to know more kind of strategic information, and that is what the investor want to know. And how can the preparer justify the payment price, the acquisition price, and that in order to make it justified, they must have reported board of directors, and the preparer must have some baseline. The investors won't know such kind of baseline. And with respect to the second question regarding indicator only approach. Actually, both preparers and the investors agree that is better approach, because by having indicator, we can have a kind of what we call fair game. So if we have a good indicator which can be agreed with preparers and the investors, then based on that indicator, we know each other what's going on. So that is the way we can move forward. So yeah, that is what we have discussed in my group.
Okay, thank you, Tuck. Seems to have very exciting. And next one, I think, is Steve.
So ours was also very exciting, and it sounded quite similar in many respects, except I had the added complication of keeping my group on message, because we had a tendency to stray into the measurement and the pre-acquisition headroom and VI value in use, fair value. So when I got them back onto message, they said things which were very similar. So in terms of the disclosure, no appetite for the first two, partly because of confidentiality, but also partly because the preparers just didn't think they would work. But then the investors were saying, well, but we need something, we need some way of evaluating this. But no real sort of appetite for the first two. Some perhaps appetite for the breakdown of goodwill by past acquisition, that got a little bit more traction. In terms of the indicators versus quantitative, I think quite similar, an agreement that may well be an approach. But one or two said, maybe going a bit too far, perhaps we should be doing some quantitative test every 3 years as a way of mitigating the potential problem of companies abusing the system, but otherwise very similar to that.
Thanks, Steve. Group two, Shanwu.
Yes, we changed the order of questions because the first question one is maybe take a lot of time, so we jumped to the question two, more easy one. But, so we have a quite good consensus on the question two. Yes, generally preparers do not like annual impairment test, so they would like to have approach one, completely relieved from the annual test, because the preparers think that's a kind of mechanical exercise. There's nothing, you know, nothing important, meaningful to investors, so they would like to. And also, some preparers would like to have the amortization method, like Japanese companies. So if their impairment is not so reliable, and also the indicators or only approach might have some kind of limitations too, so in that case, amortization might be another good idea. As in the beginning, Mariette asked what the goodwill is. If there are many components of the goodwill, maybe some elements not recognized in the on the balance sheet, maybe amortization might be a good idea to just mechanically write down in some amount. That's there. So, additional indicators, if we eliminate this annual impairment test, Iwaki, you suggested the comparison of discount cash flows, right?
Yeah, that's normal, you know, approach.
Yeah, normal approach.
Yeah. So additional one I suggested, maybe we can disclose, you know, performance of key products.
Key products.
Yeah, like net sales, not necessarily at the year level, but just net sales.
Yeah, that disclosure of net sales of key products might be more related to the maybe to question one. Maybe additional disclosure of a subsequent acquisition. So anyway, there are the good indicators to be added to the list of IAS 36. It's not easy. So, but basically, many other indicators are not recommended, but that's one explorative area to think about. And the final question is for the indicators of in the internal area. So we asked the our group the non-financial indicators might be a good idea in addition to financial indicators. Our general consensus, they are not necessary because these non-financial indicators might be linked to the financial indicators in the end. So these are non-financial indicators might not be a good idea. That's the, our general opinion of the, our group members. And also the final question on this related to question two, maybe not. The difference between the VIU value in use and fair value LCD, our group members are perceiving there are some difference between these two. So this might be another area we have to think about. Let's go to the question one. The additional disclosures or removing existing disclosures. Actually, these additional disclosures are there is a really, as the group member just said, is an exciting area. Users would like to have more information on subsequent performance of this acquiree or some kind of related cash generating unit. However, preparers are feeling very difficult or burdensome to disclose all detailed information on this subsequent performance. So this is a kind of a tension between these two groups. So that's I felt the same tension in this group too. And so there are actually some investors think market price is the best indicator, best information whether this company is good or not. So there are good information and its impairment might not be a good information for investors to rely on. So this kind of ignorance of this kind of this information on goodwill and its impairment might be in markets, I guess. So that's a rather good implication for the IASB. So we have to think about more carefully. And actually, Iwaki said maybe the additional performance in the information disclosure can be done on the level of their maybe some high level of top products of the CGU might be. If that's a CGU is quite close to the segment, operating segment, maybe then might be maybe preparers can provide such information. However, actual comparison and the comparison between the actual performance and target performance might not be easy, as I discussed before. So that's one thing we have to think. That's the on the summary our group had. So anybody, our member, to add well by summarize.
Okay, thanks Chengwu. And I have to report back on our group. And on the first disclosure regarding these key targets, key assumptions, I think there was consensus that it's difficult, even in some or in many cases even not possible to track kind of this target synergies. And reason is because maybe you have a number of smaller acquisitions, or you integrate it into an existing kind of unit, and then you have targets for the bigger unit, not really only the acquisitions, and then to distinguish what is come from the acquisition, what comes from the existing business is very, very difficult. And therefore, I think consensus was maybe a good idea, but not possible to do that. Second question was breakdown of goodwill. I think Preparer said it could be done, but it was challenged what is really the benefits of doing that, and what do users are doing with this breakdown of historical goodwill if that is integrated in existing business, or what is the information value really of this. So not a problem to do this, but it was challenged, okay, really, what are the benefits of this disclosure? Second question was existing disclosure, which may be not useful, and we all discrete pre-tax discount rate is not useful. Sensitivity analysis, we had different views. Some people said it is not of any value, others said it is. So not really a consensus on that. And then on the second part of the question, it was this annual test. And we had, most of our people said, okay, this is a good idea, and it will get relief of this annual test. And my method preferred was, I think, the approach one, which is I can do it all the time, was not to do it, I think, in the first years to require that. And then on the question, okay, any suggestions for any indicators that could be added? And the main issue we discussed was market to book value for a company based on the peer group. And also then, what is a long-term change in this market to book value based on this company compared to the peer group? And all the macroeconomic indicators could help. And then on the non-financial, maybe market share of products, because many acquisitions want, its achievement is okay to increase market share, and that is a question then, is that achieved? And that could be an indicator to do an impairment test. Clearly, okay, change in key management personnel, because often the CEO change triggers an impairment. And actions taken by regulators or others, okay, against the company could also be an indicator for an impairment. That's it. I think we would give Steven or Stefan a chance to add to this conversation. Any suggestions? Are you on the phone and do you have to add something?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, short comment on my side. I think what wasn't mentioned was, whatever we disclose needs to be audited. And that goes a little bit into what you mentioned, Martin, also. A lot of those things which were also from an indicator perspective will be super difficult to have audited later on in the process. And I think that will be one of the challenges. The other comment I have is we haven't actually talked about what happens with goodwill if you reorganize internally and the way how this currently IAS describes the method you're using. If you take the relative method, it will be super, it's close to our, well, you disable basically the connection with the acquired company to the goodwill item which you acquired initially. And I'm wondering a little bit in this whole discussion, actually, how have you considered when you were discussing what has happened with the goodwill item after maybe the second or third internal reorganization where you have shuffled goodwill in between different segments? Yeah. So I think that is also a problem if you want to disclose more around goodwill. How are you dealing with that complexity if you reorganize and have a goodwill actually reshuffled between different segments?
Yeah. I think we also said that if you have a number of smaller acquisitions, reorganizations, then tracking all that is very, very difficult and not impossible. Okay, thanks for that. Any other comments, questions?
Maybe one. If I was one of the vocal ones in group four, so I apologize for if we go down the path, and I'm sympathetic to the investors needing more and having more timely information, if we go down the path of disclosing more, and maybe it came up to part of this is the assessment of management's ability to execute on an execution or on an acquisition, why don't we make it as you've got your mandatory disclosures, which are part of the pronouncements already, make optional type disclosures or subjective type disclosures and include those as you also should consider disclosing X, Y, and Z, which are the more needs of the investors. Then it gives management a little bit of an opportunity to use judgment to say, under this acquisition, it's very competitive, and if I do that, my team members, my company, my value are actually at risk, then I'm not going to disclose those. Other ones that would say, okay, yeah, I'm confident in doing that, and that is the best thing to do. It will give the investors also the financial reporting leaders will probably step up to those anyway. So you're going to be able to assess management's ability for open transparency and reporting, and it gives them an option then to meet the investors' needs while still meeting a minimum requirement and not putting that shelf. Because the moment you do that shelf, you end up thinking, we're going to have to do, for those conditions in condition A, which are very detrimental to my business, I'm going to get very boilerplate. I'll meet the needs, but I'm going to get so boilerplate, it's not going to be worth the investor's purchase anyway. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's a compromise as we go through this on and looking at that as an option.
Okay, thanks, Peter.
I can tell you what will happen. If we don't solve this better than today, because you meet it all the time in the companies. You meet it if you do a large acquisition, you meet the analyst on a telephone conference asking you what is the future margin in the group, future growth and future margin. Previous you said 7.2, what is the new margin that you have for the group, including this acquisition? And they will follow it each quarter for the coming three quarters. The fourth quarter, you do a new large acquisition, new questions, new margins, and it goes on and on. And then in the annual report, you have to state what is your long-term goal for margins and growth. Why not return on capital and growth? Because for long ago, we have scrapped the balance sheet because of this. Because the balance sheet is flawed, it includes a lot of items that no one really understands, other intangibles that not even the company themselves can explain, and so on. Leave out the balance sheet. Let's focus at growth and margins. So consequently, the last 20 years I've seen ongoing process in Swedish companies. They are, the analysts, the investors are requiring long-term goals for growth and margins. And that is because we don't really care about each and individual acquisition, maybe the large ones. Some people on the universities trying to track them, whether they are good or not.
most of the acquisitions are untrackable, absolutely untrackable, so they cannot track it. So if we don't solve this more properly than now, the balance sheet will forever be forgotten. And what you will state are long-term goals for margins and growth. Do you really want that?
Maybe, yeah, I think, but isn't that...
It's not directed to you. No, no, no. Do you really want that, Don?
But isn't that...
I have both ways now.
Isn't that what we do as leaders of our organization? We have to, and why I, again, think the acquisition, and I agree with you, the individual acquisitions become a stepping stone or a puzzle piece, that long-term growth and margins. Because you can grow by organic growth, and I can invest $2 billion in organic growth, and you judge me then on exactly future growth and margins. When I do an acquisition, and let's say it was only a $200 million acquisition, yet I spent $2 billion on organic, to have more disclosure on an M&A and an acquisition is ridiculous. Because my whole goal is to put the puzzle pieces together for that long-term growth and margins. So I agree with your messaging on you need to convey that as you go forward. But that's our job as management to drive towards, are we actually performing to that future level of putting those puzzle pieces together, not one individual small piece when you look at the aggregate of what we do.
But I can also give you the solution to the problem.
So it would be good, yeah?
It's not
good.
funny. My bad.
And you sit on it.
It's the separation between other intangibles and goodwill. What I spot are like an engineering company valued on the stock market, long-term valuation, 3x equity, buying another company 10x equity, ending up with 10% of the total as other intangibles, the rest as goodwill. To me, it's absolutely impossible that a company that is valued 3x goodwill can not have other intangibles, or if you like, a belief that the sustainable growth and the sustainable margin will be on at least the current level. Of course, we need to refer much more to other intangibles. And I think the best way to do it is using the key ratios that we have. In an engineering company in Sweden, in long-term valuation is 3x equity. In a pharmaceutical today, the long-term valuation is around 4 or 5x equity. A bank, 1x equity. Unless it's a German bank, then it's 0.5 and so on. Come up to much better conclusions on other intangibles than when you sit down and try to figure out whether this refers to customer lists or product rights or, let's call in the consultants from EY to tell us what we have bought. To me, that is the ridiculous exercise I have ever come across, and I have yet to come across a CFO that don't agree with me. So I think we cannot focus on impairment tests. We need to focus on the separation between goodwill, which to a great extent is an accounting error. Accounting is prudent, pushing down equity, and so on. More in a pharmaceutical company with all the research and development, less in a bank because the turnover in the bank's balance sheet is faster. We need to get this straightened out instead of focusing on impairment tests. That's my conclusion.
Thanks, Peter. Stephen?
I'm surprised to say that I seem to be coming to the same point as you. I wasn't expecting that.
And we were the same group.
Very surprised. So yes, I think my observation is that to focus on the disclosures of the goodwill impairment is to look at the spec and ignore the log. The log being the acquisition accounting and how it's the purchase price is allocated out to the units. And it seems to me that the users and preparers are not aligned in their understanding of
they're
that.
On the break,
so therefore there's work to be done in making sure that that point is understood, and only then can preparers seek to satisfy the users' needs in subsequent disclosure and accounting.
Okay, thanks, Steve. at this beginning of the discussion and
Well, actually, I have, and I would really like to thank the preparers, the many preparers who helped me to understand how this actually works, because before this I hadn't a clue, now I'm very clear on it. So that's the good news. The bad news is that I think it just goes to show whenever you get asked the wrong questions, you get the wrong answers. And I really agree with Peter that basically I think this whole concept is really so flawed, the whole concept of the way we approach goodwill, that no matter what you do about the goodwill impairment testing, you're really just plastering over the problem. I mean, essentially, goodwill is basically a hybrid of several concepts where I struggle with each one of them individually. You know, you have intangible assets in goodwill that are basically that are depreciable, but they're considered so intangible that you don't want to put them onto the balance sheet as an intangible, like, for example, the workforce. And so instead of putting it on as an intangible and depreciating it, you put it onto goodwill, and it sits there forever. So to me, that's a big contradiction. And the second thing is that you put a lot of future cash flows, e.g. from synergies, onto the goodwill, and basically you end up double counting those as soon as they start coming through, playing out and coming through the P&L and making their way into equity. So I really think we need to have a better discussion about, you know, what shall we do about goodwill, you know, which parts are really intangible assets that would actually be better off being treated as intangible assets and being transparent, and which parts should maybe actually be taken directly against equity, because, you know, if you're as a pharma company, you take a punt on your future pipeline. You can either invest into your organic product, and it all gets expensed through the P&L, nothing gets capitalized, or you can acquire somebody who's already put some work into that, and then suddenly it's in goodwill until the end of time. So I think we need a better philosophical discussion.
Yeah. Maria, only one comment to that, because we have done the post-implementation review of this goodwill and goodwill impairment test, which is, I think, 1.5 or 2 years ago, and that the response which we received from other stakeholders was not as you say. So they said, okay, it's overall okay, but you have to do a little bit on, because it is too costly, and therefore we're looking at, okay, how to make this test more efficient. And, okay, some said, okay, we have to do something on the effectiveness of this test, because the goodwill impairment is done always too late. And that is the reason why we have undertaken this research project, and there was not a majority have said, okay, your overall system or your overall thing is broken and it is bullshit what you are doing. But if you would have received this feedback, maybe you would have responded in a different way. That was the content of this feedback, and therefore we looking at this question.
But I appreciate your
thought. It's always very dangerous to have preparers explain the rationale behind goodwill. You better have investors explain the rationale behind goodwill.
But I don't think add something to CMAC.
I don't think Mariette is alone on this. What Peter said is, I think it's half right, which is that I'm quite happy, because I, from my point of view, I basically don't think this is very important because I ignore it. But I ignore it for the reason that Peter has said, which is that it is so complicated that I'm basically into the flows. And once you get the flows, you get the valuation, and the balance sheet is completely irrelevant, really. You know, PPE itself is not a kind of valuable concept unless you can sell.
IFRS 15 and 16, the balance sheet's even worse.
Right, and you've got all these weird concepts, deferred taxation, all that kind of stuff. The balance sheet is basically a mess. But the flows are fine. And goodwill is just another one of those things. The only difference is that goodwill flows sometimes flows to the income statement, and those are the times when you want to take it out.
You would take it out.
Do we have a preparer to respond to that? Okay, but thank you. Thanks for this discussion. And I think before we leave, and I think the GPF will have another session, which is on next segment, but I think the CMAC members will leave now. Before you're doing that, I think you want to say that we have in the GPF, we have 5 members, which I think all were founder members 10 years ago, which will have their last meeting. Mantua are not present. Mantua has already left. He was also one of these founder members In addition, it was Gerard Schill, which was not able to attend this meeting, but we have Jacques, who has this last meeting. We have Olivia. Olivia will, I think, serve as an advisory council member and advise us in this kind of magnitude now in the future. And we have the former chairman, Malcolm. And I have to say, really a big thank for all of you for contribution over 10 years, giving us advice, which we have really appreciated. So I want to say, everybody, give a hand. Again, I want to say, on the CIMAC meeting, we have Bertrand, who has his last meeting today. Is not right?
Robert Morgan.
Guess again.
Yeah, wrong information. But then I want to say, because I think Stephen will also leave us as a board member, and all is his last CIMAC and the joint CIMAC GPF meeting. And also, Stephen, thank you very much. Okay, that concludes our joint meeting. And again, all of you, thank you very much for coming. But Marietta wants...
First of all, on behalf of the CMAC, I would like to thank the ISB and all of the attendees for a fantastic meeting. I think we all enjoyed this very much and thought it was very productive. And would also like to take the opportunity to thank Robert for his fantastic contributions. I know you'll be on another CMAC meeting.
No, I'm coming back one more time.
I know, but you're not coming back next year to the Prepare Us Forum to discuss how to fix the balance sheet, which is a great thing. I'm sure your contributions would be as thought-provoking as ever. But it's also, for the CMAC, it's the end of an era, because our board member in charge of the CMAC is coming off, Stephen Cooper. And so really wanted to thank you on behalf of the CMAC for the great collaboration over the last years. It was a pleasure working with you. And speaking for myself, I can definitely say that there are some accounting problems that I probably would never have gotten to the bottom of if it hadn't been for your clarifications and your patience. So thank you so much, Stephen. And
thank you.
Like to.